Welcome to the intersection of technology, cybersecurity, and society. Welcome to ITSP Magazine Podcast Radio. Join us on our journey into the past, the present, and the future as we explore the relationship between technology and humanity. Together, we are going to find out what it means to live in a society where everything is connected and the only constant is change. Knowledge is power, now more than ever. BugCrowd's award-winning platform combines actionable contextual intelligence with the skill and experience of the world's most elite hackers to help leading organizations identify and fix vulnerabilities, protect customers, and make the digitally connected world a safer place. Learn more at bugcrowd.com. Devo unlocks the full value of machine data for the world's most instrumented enterprises. The Devo Data Analytics Platform addresses the explosion in volume of machine data and the crushing demands of algorithms and automation. Learn more at devo.com.
Marco.
Sean, here we go.
Here we are. I feel that hacking is not a crime.
I always feel like that. So you're breaking an open door.
I know.
And it was about time that somebody starts screaming about that and really making a point. And today on this presentation that we do about organizations that are taking care of letting everybody know that hacking is not a crime and giving the instruments and the group, the power of the group to be together and achieve what their passion is, because come on, Sean, hacking is a passion after all.
Hacking is a passion. It's a mindset, as we often say, and I think we've heard a million times as well. And I don't know, just think about a car as a teenager and souping it up and making it your own. And that's hacking, right?
Hell yeah. Of course.
Or changing the way your television works or your whatever. It's a way of thinking, trying to make something do that it wasn't designed to do. Doesn't have to be for nefarious purposes. When it does cross that line, they become cyber criminals.
That's right. You don't call them anymore.
But ethical hacking, the good research community, they are at risk for doing the good work they're doing, and they need a safe space to do that. And thankfully, we have somebody who's very passionate about this, very active in this world, our good friend, Chloe Misdoggy. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Marco and Sean. This is fun.
Cool. I feel like it's a deja vu because you do so many things that today we don't know what you present. But no, we do know. But let's start again with you, and then we're going to dive in into what is this organization you're representing today.
My name is Chloe Misdoggy, and I'm the co-founder of Hacking Is Not a Crime. And basically, the story is very simple in a sense that I wanted to change how things are in the hacker space. But the thing was that a lot of people in the hacker community weren't aware of resources that are available for them. But also, you always hear this every time you go to a conference, that they're tired of not having rights and that they want to be part of society. They want to be feeling like they deserve to be there and also to feel like they are getting some recognition because they're serving and protecting us every single day. And we have to call ourselves sometimes security researcher instead of hacker, so then people feel more comfortable. But in reality, we are hackers, and we've always been hackers. And so the problem is that we have legislation that's been around since the 80s, and things have not changed. And if anything, we see a lot of people in our community constantly scared to report vulnerabilities that they find. And also on top of that, they just, even if they report vulnerabilities, they're always worried of a lawsuit that might happen. So this can't keep continuing like this. This is not acceptable. So in return, I put together a petition, and in the petition, it breaks it down by organizations, by legislators, and by the hacker community and the media of how each player has a role in this. So if we want hacker rights, we need to work together across all those different fields. And I wanted to go further than just that petition that had hundreds of people signing it. And I realized from like starting some other organizations, it's always good to have a partner because it is almost impossible to do all this on your own. It's always good. And that's the one thing we learned in the pandemic is have a buddy. Like, you're going to need a buddy. And I came across Hack Not Crime on Twitter, which is Hacking Is Not a Crime, but shortened. And I was like, why have I never heard about this group here? Is this even a group? Like, who are these people? And I like their slogan because that's what I'm trying to push here. So I reached out and I was like, hi, I'm very interested in connecting with you because I'm trying to find someone who can work with me and try to bring this petition to life and to actually get these things happening. And then it turns out it was Brian. And I had no idea it was Brian. So Brian sends back, like, hey, Chloe, how's it going? It's Brian who runs this. So it's like, what? And then we got on a phone. Next thing I know is that we just start going and we run with it. And by October, we started reaching out to some of our friends and colleagues and to try to see if they would be interested in being advocates, because we know all of them talk about this. We all have been talking about this for the longest time. Now is the time that we do something about it. And then that's how things kind of kicked off. That was the beginning of it all.
The beginning of the beginning. And I want to ask you, Chloe, because we do a good job talking security to the security industry. And beyond that, it becomes more difficult to reach a broader audience to help them understand. But even that first step, if we get that right, is not enough, right? There has to be action, and it can't just be, again, within the security community. And you mentioned the other different groups here, but then resources are a big thing, and you touched on that as well. What do hackers need to help them do what they do safely and in a way that protects them? I don't know if legal stuff is necessary or whatever. I don't know if you can kind of shed some light on some of that. That would be
sure.
Great.
So Hacking Is Not a Crime, what we're trying to be is that platform that everyone goes to. So if you're a very beginner hacker, you're interested in the hacker community, or you yourself as a hacker, this is a place where you start. It's a place where you have an idea of what are the resources out there, because most of the time we don't know of any resources that exist. So we might do vulnerability disclosure in a way that we probably should not be doing vulnerability disclosure. So this is why it's good to partner with other organizations. So like disclose.io, we push forward to get organizations involved with have vulnerability disclosure policies. We also push for I Am the Calvary, because they've been in this situation talking to legislators for quite some time. Same with EFF. They help on every single legal matter and personal rights and freedoms on the internet and beyond that. So these are some great organizations when thinking of who's there for us. There's also CertCC. So if you're trying to report a vulnerability, but you're nervous about that, they might be a good group to connect with. But also we have these advocates that are also these mentors. So if anyone had any questions or needs some advice, those people are there too. So it's a good place to get started. Know who are the organizations and the conferences that are trying to change how the things are right now. But I think a lot of people in the hacker community, you know, they weren't aware that hacker rights is something that we don't have. And then you have some that like just haven't ever thought about it either. That it's a possibility. And so we're trying to bridge that.
Yeah. And another thing that the media are getting completely wrong is that mythical picture of the hacker alone in the basement and with the hoodie. The truth is quite different. The community is tight. Hackers works in team, and I'm talking about the ethical hackers. And the news is that the cyber criminal work in team too. So that's the misconception as well. And where I'm going with this is you guys have put together, as you were listing before, an amazing number of people that collaborates with you. But I'm sure there is other people out there that want to participate. So we'd like to know how they can do that. And what's your next step? What's the goal in the next, I don't know, year? I hate to put a date on it because I don't even remember where this year went, but you know, coming up.
Yeah,
I would say how people can help.
Right. So I would say like the number one priority for Hacking Is Not a Crime is to change public perception too. So public perception that we're not these people that are like in a basement with a hoodie on. And I mean, we do have hoodies on, but let's be real. Everyone wears a hoodie these days. If you're a tech person, you're most likely owning a hoodie. Let's be real. If you're in any industry, you most likely have a hoodie. So it's not just for us. But the reality of it is that we need to change people's perceptions of who we are and the terminology. And that's by working with the press. That means also making sure our advocates are pushing out when they talk to the press, using their correct terminology and being cognizant that the reporter may not be aware that there's two separate parties. There's attackers, there's hackers. And the difference is intent. They use the exact same skills, but for very different intent. One is malicious, the other one is not. And that's the thing is a lot of reporters, they still use the term hacker when they should be using it, attacker. And so it's up to us in the community to correct them very gently. And by gently, I mean not like screaming at them or anything like that. Just note that they just don't know. At the end of the day, they just don't know. And because they don't know, if you yell at them, do you think they're going to be listening? No. When was the last time someone yelled at you? Are you listening to them or are you thinking, I got to defend myself right now? And that's how human behavior works. So it's about being kind, being understandable, and working to challenge these socially constructed beliefs in society about hackers.
Cool. And how can people help then? You're looking for more labor, more volunteers?
Yeah, we can always use more volunteers. I mean, at the end of the day, we always could use someone to help us on social media. We could also use any coordination because we have a lot of advocates and we're probably going to have beyond 100 soon. So the thing is to have someone who can help us with that front. We want to make sure communication is solid across. So anyone who wants to volunteer and help, that'd be great. If you want to be an advocate yourself, that means that you agree to our code of conduct. You also believe in our mission. That we are asking at this time, you know, go to our website and fill out the form. But please note that a reference is needed at this time. And this is a good way how we get started. We want to trust everyone who comes in the community because, you know, there's trolls and they exist out there, unfortunately. But we're always looking for partners. So if you're a company or an organization for a conference and you want to participate, you want to fight for rights and work with organizations to try to get vulnerability disclosure policies or to work with hackers and to try to get other people to be on that same page, we're always looking for that. We also look forward towards having affiliates, and that could be, once again, conferences that are pushing this type of agenda, trying to bring rights for hackers, but also to bring resources to the hacker community. And if there's any organizations that are not listed on our site that have been great resources for the hacker community, let us know. We would love to partner with them as well.
Yep. Love it, Chloe. Amazing work you're doing for this and many other things. And hackingisnotacrime.org.
Yep.
Go there.
Exactly. Thank you.
Thank you, Chloe.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks.
All right, Marco.
Sean, exciting time.
It is exciting times, and perhaps even more exciting for some of us who like to do research to make things better in our society from a technology perspective. But those researchers find themselves in a precarious place sometimes.
Talking about hackers?
I'm talking about hackers.
Not cyber criminal, hackers.
Which cyber criminals, they find themselves in precarious situations as well, but for different reasons, I think.
Exactly.
And that's kind of the point here, is that there's a lot of misconceptions around what a hacker is and what they do and why they do it. And there are a number of organizations that thankfully have been established a long time ago to tackle this problem and much, much more. And we're fortunate to have one of those organizations represented here on this episode through who I believe will become a good friend, Kurt Opsahl from Electronic Frontier Foundation. Kurt, thanks for joining.
Thanks for having me.
All right. So hopefully the entire world know what Electronic Frontier Foundation does and how it came to be. that's in an ideal world. I doubt that's the truth, unfortunately, except for those like us that are in the industry and in the community. So how about we start with a little bit of about yourself and how you are involved with the organization and literally how it came to be a long time ago.
Sure. Yeah. So the Electronic Frontier Foundation, it's a nonprofit organization, is dedicated to defending rights online, trying to protect privacy, freedom of expression, innovation, and it was founded in 1990. So, before there was the web as we know it today, when people were using things like bulletin board systems, and then there was like Gopher and some terms you'll have to look up on Wikipedia for some of the audience. But so we've been around. Just had our 30th anniversary. And looking forward to 30 more years, because the issues that we're working on have become so much more ingrained into our society that, everything has, your toaster has an internet connection. It is part of the world in which we live in a way that was kind of unimaginable. And EFF has long been a good friend to, and we get a lot of support from, the security community. We care a lot about computer security and about hackers. And we're talking about the term hackers, and I think some people use it pejoratively to use it interchangeably with cyber criminals. But for us at least, hacker is not a bad word. Sort of reminded me of the hacker one of the original documents manifesto. My only crime was curiosity. For a lot of people, hacking was a way of figuring out how the world worked when you were given something and said, okay, it has this set of rules. Then can you break those rules? Can you make it do something that was unexpected or has new possibilities? And by comparison, everything else wants to be locked down, take the world as it's given to you. And so hackers want to take the world for what it can be and what it can do, and not just what is intended by the originator. That's really cool and amazing stuff. A brief moment to talk about some of the work that I do at the Electronic Frontier Foundation. So one of the projects that I work on is called the Coders' Rights Project. So we provide legal advice to hackers, to security researchers who have run into legal issues involved with their research. So it may be that there are questions about whether it is lawful to conduct the research, or maybe if it's lawful to conduct the research, what legal trouble might they get for disclosing something that a company doesn't want disclosed? And there might be times when a company, most of the time these days is getting more and more problem where a company reacts reasonably well. You identify a bug, a vulnerability to them, and they try to address it, and they don't get all antagonistic. But it does happen, where a company is upset that their product was breached, and they don't want that to be known. They think it's not true, or they think it's an edge case, and you can turn my toaster, kind of go on fire remotely, but no one's ever going to do that, so we're not going to fix it. And these kind of reactions are harmful to security. So we help people navigate that. Oftentimes, with the end result is to give a presentation at a hacker conference to explain the vulnerabilities they find and help educate the world about these vulnerabilities, how to stop them, and hopefully to not put them in the next product.
And I think that's the challenge, right, Kurt? One of the main points you made there, which is nobody's going to do that to me. Yes, it may be possible, but nobody's going to do that. And I think regardless of the number of stories we see in the news, that can't be a viable response long-term, right, for most organizations. So awareness and education, clearly big parts of what you're doing at EFF. And it's not always a simple on or off dial either, right? Can you talk to some of the challenges you face as you're having these conversations with the hacking community as well as with the business community?
Yeah, so I would say one of the things is when the hackers are interacting with the business community, it is a lot of it has to do with whether it's a new entrant from the business side. That is to say, where they've had interactions with security research before or they haven't. sometimes call it a first contact scenario, where a new industry that previously hadn't been exposed to the security community now is, and someone's, you know, hacked their machine and says there's a problem. And for a lot of these sort of more older line companies, you know, they have a mandate. The CEO is like, put internet on everything. And they're like, okay, let's put internet on everything. And they don't think it through. Security was not sort of built into their DNA. And they haven't really thought about it. And now they got a problem. And they see it as a PR problem. They see it as a threat to their business. And that's where reactions go badly. Like, one of the things that is most likely to change the course of it is whether you're able to contact a company and you're talking to their security team or engineers, where things tend to go all right, or you're talking to their PR or maybe legal, where things get very defensive and challenging.
It's a fine line. One good news, I think, that we've seen in the past few years is the fact that there is a dialogue that has started. So it's maybe not that good and bad, black and white anymore, but there is been a realization that there needs a conversation between the government and the legal entity and the agencies and the hackers that are doing this, and the business and society sits right in the middle. So I know we're going to plan a much larger conversation that will probably go a little bit of the difference that we used to have 30 years ago and what we're going to have in 30 years from now. So without going that far, what are the issues and the priority that right now the Electronic Frontier Foundation is focusing the most as we move forward into this year and the next couple of years?
I mean, there are so many issues that we're looking at. I mean, some having nothing to do with security, like, you know, Section 230, which is the law that protects internet service providers from liability for what the people say. That's a big issue right now. And that comes up in the related areas of disinformation and the spread of it online. But I guess in the security space, one of the things that we've been looking a lot at is the rise of disciplinary technologies that are designed to enforce things. And a common one these days is proctorware, where students are being required to use certain software that will theoretically ensure that when they're taking a test and such that they are not cheating. But it's often very invasive software that, you know, if you get up to go to the bathroom, it, you know, it says this is a problem. If you look away, they say it's a problem. Some of this software, you know, incorporates facial recognition. And these are technologies which are put onto your computer, but they aren't yours. They are designed to, you know, stop you from using the computer that you have in the way that you wanted. And so very much they're acting in a similar manner as to malware. And there's been a lot of interesting security research around them. Turns out many have flaws. Another area that has been hot, and perhaps it won't be forever, are COVID-related apps. Apps designed to tell you an exposure notification, those are out now, and hopefully we won't need them for a whole lot longer. But one of the things is they're privacy invasive, so when we don't need them, we gotta stop using them. But a new form is often being talked about: vaccine passports. Passports, you know, electronic devices that will say, I'm immune, I'm vaccinated, that people might use to say, okay, you need to show your vaccine passport before you can, you know, enter the building, go on the bus. And a lot of these things with the COVID apps and maybe unfortunately might be true as well for the vaccine apps, is they are being built by people who are the low cost bidder with Department of Public Health without a lot of security. And I think, you know, with exposure notification, eventually came around to a product that was put together by Apple and Google. Hits a lot of good spots, and Apple and Google, you know, you may not want to have your information, but their security teams are for real. But before that, there were apps, you know, that were done with weird bidding and by companies that had never made an app before, and then they just produced something that was privacy invasive, leaked information, and had all those problems. So we're looking at some of those.
Yeah, I love it. And then as we get close to the end of this conversation, Kurt, I'm gonna pull from the site. EFF's mission is to ensure that technology supports freedom, justice, and innovation for all people of the world. And I think it's very lofty. And I know from having followed and even engaged with some folks from EFF, some of the topics, even as you just described them, can be a bit edgy or controversial, right? Because different people have different objectives and different goals. Some might be financial, some may be power or political. And EFF's job is to raise those issues so that people can understand and engage and participate. If that's correct, confirm. If it needs to be adjusted, maybe adjust it a bit. Then, and how and who should participate with EFF, and how can they do that?
So I think the short form I often say is we fight for the user. Maybe a slight reference for those who remember the Tron movie, but being on the side of the user, there's a lot of other people who have an interest in the space. There are governments, there are companies, but we try and focus on empowering and representing the users and trying to give them a chance to do well. And that, the users are enhanced by security research. They're enhanced by laws that protect users, and they're harmed by things that try and tell, take control over your computers. So who should be looking at EFF? Come to EFF.org, check us out if you use a computer or really any kind of device, because the issues we're working on, say, used to be a little bit more niche, but now the vast majority of the world has access to computers. It's less so in some parts of the world. Even in pretty remote areas, people will have mobile phones and be connecting to the internet. The issues are worldwide, and they want to help everybody.
Yeah, and with that, I don't think I can end this in a better way, except for go back to where you started, citing the mentor and the curiosity that really it's what motivates hackers to turn the world into something better. Not what is being given to us, but what can we make with it? And with that, I want to thank you very much for this. I'm looking forward for a more in-depth conversation. And I do invite everybody that is interested to be part of the Electronic Frontier Foundation and to learn more or even donate, because it's a non-profit organization, to check it out. There'll be links, Sean, in our resources for this podcast. So
certainly will.
Yep. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your time.
Thanks, Kurt.
Great to be here.
Marco, we're off and running.
Sean, yeah, another chapter of our new series about introducing very relevant topics.
Yes, organizations that represent the community that care about making things safer for us.
What are you talking about?
I think I'm talking about hackers.
Ah, okay.
Hackers and
then we agree.
Hackers' rights in general, and the ability for people who care to look at different parts of where we live and how we live and do something cool. And I'm thrilled for this conversation with our good friend Bo Woods, representing I Am the Calvary. And great organization we've been following for quite a while, and we're going to learn more about it. So Bo, if you can kick us off, a brief word about yourself and all, and it's going to be hard to be brief, all the cool things you do and you're up to.
Yeah, I'll try and keep it to a minimum amount of time. I know that we're on a clock here. So my name is Bo Woods. I wear a lot of different hats these days. Several of those include I help organize several of the villages at DEF CON, and I'm on the policy goon team looking at areas where cybersecurity, and I'm allowed to say cyber because I live inside the DC Beltway. But it is St. Patrick's Day, so I'll still do a drink later. cybersecurity and information security intersect with public policy and some of the larger debates. I am a non-resident senior fellow called the Cyber Safety Innovation Fellow at a think tank in DC called the Atlantic Council. I run a small consulting company called Stratego Security, and I work for the Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency of the U.S. government.
And that's just part of what you do. So
that's a recent
just role. Part of what I do. In addition to the I Am the Cavalry grassroots nonprofit, all volunteer efforts.
So let's get into that, because we're doing very quick presentation this time. So let's start from the beginning. How did the I'm the Cavalry came together? Like, what was the spark and the main reason why we got to get this done? Something got to be done.
Yeah. So back in 2013, a few security researchers, members of the hacker community at B-Sides Las Vegas 2013, put on a presentation called The Cavalry Isn't Coming. And the idea was that our dependence on connected technology is growing much faster than our ability to secure it in areas impacting human life, public safety, and national security. So what does that mean? Well, if you look at the world around you, if you're looking down at the street from your apartment building, every car that goes by has somewhere between 20 and 200 computers in it, and that's only increasing. The air conditioner and heating unit on the top of your building is probably computer controlled, probably connected over 4G to a maintenance tech back at the home office, and who knows what security is on any of those things. When you go into a hospital, if you get an implanted medical device, or if you're just in the hospital getting treatment, everything around you is computerized, it's connected to the internet. So there's two parts of that, and most people from the hacker community understand these really, really well. The first part is, if it has software, it's vulnerable, and if it's connected, it's exposed to adversaries. So we saw that while we're spending about $1 trillion every 5 years on people, product, services globally on cybersecurity every 5 years, almost none of that is going to things that are safety critical. So human life, public safety systems, most of it is, you know, highly replaceable assets, things like financial fraud, things like, you know, credit card numbers, maybe some personally identifiable information. But we said that that balance is probably wrong. We need to shift to focus more on the things that are more critical, that are less replaceable, like human life, like public safety. So over the past 8 years now, gosh, that's been a while, we've been working within the hacker community, the business community, going and talking to government, whether it's, you know, agencies or public policymakers, only some of who are politicians, and trying to, as we say, raise the alarm without being alarmist. So trying to get the right message to the right people at the right time to catalyze action so that before we have a catastrophe, we can do something about it. And or after the catastrophe happens, we reach for better approaches to address it rather than just whatever playbook has been sitting on the shelf for 20 years that is no longer workable, or something that, you know, someone with lesser motives and lesser ideals and lesser knowledge comes in and drops on their table for them to pick up and to sign into law. So there's a preparedness aspect. And there's a readying aspect for when the bad thing happens. We want to be have a better approach to addressing it than the typical highly reactionary one.
Yeah, and it, excellent points there, Bo. And I've seen a number of presentations from you and Josh and others, and the work you do in the Biohacking Village and whatnot. And it's not just exposing wounds, but talking about the impact to society, and then, as you described, the response to that, and hopefully moving that response closer to design versus patching a hole that's already published. I know I've signed up for the news feed that comes through, and that's just one way people come together. What are some of the other ways that you kind of bring folks together to make all that happen, the research and the communication and the response and the connection between all the different entities that you're involved with?
Yeah. So in the before times, we We're doing a lot of conferences and helping to build some spaces at those conferences. For instance, at B-Sides Las Vegas, we have two tracks. One is the I Am the Cavalry track. One is the Public Ground track, to get like-minded folks together to be able to have these types of conversations. You mentioned the mailing list. We have a Slack group. Try and get people together on specific topics. So for instance, if there's an emerging issue in healthcare, we try to be able to swarm. So if you see things like the CTI League, which I know you guys have looked at in the past, some of the same patterns that helped I Am the Cavalry become established also worked in CTI League. So independently, they threw it up, but we helped point a lot of people to them and to get action on that quickly emerging issue. One of the things that we've done in the past is in 2017 and in 2019, we actually brought members of Congress out to DEF CON. So kind of, you know, making the flow between those large stakeholder groups work better. And they were absolutely floored. The members of Congress who showed up and in 2019, we had congressional staffers. They were floored by the intelligence, the capability, just the entire environment of it. And so things that they had been hearing for a while finally clicked into place for them. And when they heard things later, they were better able to decipher them and to interpret them. So for instance, Representative Jim Langevin from Rhode Island, who's been a huge supporter of cybersecurity efforts for many, many years, was one of those that came out. And when he got back, he gave an impassioned description of hackers as the good guys in the fight against cyber criminals, nation states, and others on the floor of the House of Representatives. So entered into the official record is some information that he distilled and gleaned from some of the conversations. And among those is his description of hackers as differently motivated. So puzzlers, protectors, pride of prestige, payment or profit, and then patriotism or protest. Him articulating that, which is a core thing that we always lead with in I Am the Cavalry, was kind of surreal. And going the other way from the hacker community into DC, I ran something called Hackers on the Hill, again, in the before times, where we got a bunch of people who were in town for events like ShmooCon, and took them and gave them a tour of the Capitol, or sat with congressional offices. 13 congressional offices hosted 50 hackers and had small conversations about things that those congressional offices wanted to know about, where the hackers were maybe some of the best poised in the country to be able to have those conversations. So various different ways that we try and get people together and solve some of these issues, not just within the hacker community, but also within other communities.
Remember you walking around with the constituents and just the energy with them in the room with all the different villages. And it's important, right, Marco, to bring folks in, but also connect the other way, as you described, Bo.
Yep. All right. So, Sean, the point I want to make is the final one is, you know, the number for the cavalry is important. So you started a few dedicated group of friends, I would say. You were all friends when this started, and many friends joined, many from the community, and many from outside the community, as you just mentioned. So I'm sure people are going to listen to this conversation right now and say, I want to be part of that. What can they do, and how can people find more about you guys?
So the first thing is you can go to iamthecavalry.org, and it's cavalry, horses, rather than Calvary, which has religious connotations. We have a mailing list there that you can sign up to. You can see what we're doing. We try and keep some of the information fairly relevant. You can follow us on Twitter at I Am the Cavalry. You can reach out to us through email and offer to volunteer, or notify us, let us know about something specific. There's a bunch of different ways to engage. And hopefully when we all get back together in person, we can sit down over a beverage of choice and have some really good conversations and try and make the world a better place.
Yeah, absolutely. And we'll include links to all these resources that you're mentioning, Bo, and keep up everything you're doing. stay strong, stay healthy. Thanks for putting IAM and Calvary together, and thanks for joining us today.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Devo unlocks the full value of machine data for the world's most instrumented enterprises. The Devo Data Analytics Platform addresses the explosion in volume of machine data and the crushing demands of algorithms and automation. Learn more at devo.com. BugCrowd's award-winning platform combines actionable contextual intelligence with the skill and experience of the world's most elite hackers to help leading organizations identify and fix vulnerabilities, protect customers, and make the digitally connected world a safer place. Learn more at bugcrowd.com. We hope you enjoyed this conversation. If you learned something new and this story made you think, then share ITSPmagazine.com with your friends, family, and colleagues. If you represent a company and wish to associate your brand with our conversations, sponsor one or more of our podcast channels. We hope you will come back for more stories and follow us on our journey. You can always find us at the intersection of technology, cybersecurity, and society.